Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada, supporting Indigenous communities in finance. That is a big part of what Cedarleaf Capital is setting out to do. It is the first Indigenous-owned investment dealer in Canada. It's created between in an agreement between Scotiabank, two Indigenous-owned corporations, and a First Nation. So lots of players here to bring this to life. We're joined by Clint Davis, CEO of Cedarleaf Capital. He joins us from his vacation. We're grateful for it to talk about this news. Clint, hello.
Hi, Bruce. It's great to be here.
Now, for context, you are Inuk from the Labrador region, but I need you to pronounce more precisely where it is that you're from.
So I was born and raised in Goose Bay, Labrador. My dad is from a small Inuit community called Rigolet, which is in the Nunatsiavut region. Nunatsiavut Inuit, we were the last Inuit land claim to be settled in Canada, which was settled in 2005.
Okay. There are many different types of investment firms in this country. There's private equity, there's venture capital, there's asset management, there's all sorts of different structures. What specifically will Cedarleaf do?
So first of all, for Cedarleaf, we put an application into the regulatory agency, which is the Canadian Investment Regulatory Organization, or CIRO. So the application is in, so we haven't received approval at this point, and it's going to take a bit of time for that to actually happen. Our approach specifically in terms of capital markets is to focus in the initial stages anyway, as part of our business plan, on debt capital markets. So primarily looking at clients, which are large publicly traded corporations, as well as public governments, participating as a junior in syndicates for new bond issuances and hopefully becoming a lead of one of those syndicates sometime in the future.
And what's different here? What are you providing that wasn't, you know, once you're all set and your I's are dotted and your T's crossed, what's different now than it would have been a couple of years ago?
So a number of things which is different. So first and foremost, this is a perfect example of economic reconciliation, where you actually have Indigenous ownership and an Indigenous-led investment dealer participating in an area of finance that we have been traditionally excluded from. So in the area of capital markets, there's very little representation of Indigenous people in this space here in Canada. So this is the first ever to happen, and it demonstrates that Indigenous ownership. The other piece is, as a result, I think, of the changing business world that we see with a greater focus on Indigenous economic development, more and more opportunities are starting to come forward where there is an Indigenous component to it. Some of the major renewable energy projects that we see across Canada, all of which would have an Indigenous piece to it. And so some of that requires significant capital, and we believe that Cedarleaf Capital will be that strong competitor and bring that differentiated advantage.
As is the case in every part of this country, there is tremendous diversity when it comes to Indigenous communities for lots and lots of different reasons. And unfortunately, in the headlines, we hear a lot about poverty and boil water advisories, but there are also many communities who have significant financial resources. Tell us about that, the nations that have, you know, mineral rights and just this incredible entrepreneurial spirit and resources.
It's a brilliant question. In fact, we're really lucky to have three of those leading business-oriented communities, those that have a strong track record, strong leadership, and projects that demonstrate their commitment to responsible and prudent economic development. Nichkai is Squamish out of British Columbia. They're embarking upon a significant $1.3 billion residential mixed, you know, residential plus commercial property in North Van. Des Nede, which is owned by English River, they had a long-standing relationship with Cameco and have extended that into real estate development in Saskatoon. And then Rama First Nation, which is an economic powerhouse in terms of its investments in gaming, but they have gone beyond that and are looking at other opportunities as well. So there have been a number of different pressures that have come forward, I think, that really have resulted in some wonderful growth that's happened with communities. Some is the resolution of land claims, for which there is a financial injection as a result of that. And with that financial component, many communities have looked at investment in business as a way to sustain that financial source. And then others who are have asserted Indigenous rights, and that requirement for duty to consult, accommodate, and even looking towards consent have translated into business opportunities for resource development that happened across the country. All of this, though, Bruce, does require strong leadership and some community, strong leadership, strong governance, and a separation of business and politics for these communities.
The answer to this question is nuanced and long, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And that is, what would you say about the cultural context in which Indigenous businesses operate? To say that there are different ways of thinking, there's different ways of acting, there's a different belief structure, there's the medicine wheel, there's like so many other things that inform how Indigenous communities think about business, some cultural, some based on history, which has been sometimes horrendous. How do you bring that into the work of Cedarleaf?
So it's a brilliant question. And in fact, you know, it's interesting because I was the chair of my community's development corporation over a decade. And we didn't have any political leaders on our board. But one of the things, there were two things which were absolutely critical for us. Obviously, you want to make sure that any of the businesses that you're operating in are sustainable, generating enough revenue, generating enough return in order to ensure that you're generating that value and creating that value for your shareholder. But honestly, we would always talk about impact of any of our businesses or partnerships on the land, because many of our citizens still use the land for cultural and traditional purposes. And we'd focus on ensuring that we'd have some development and training of our own people to work in the businesses that we were actually hiring. So it's kind of interesting where over the last 5 years to 10 years, you've seen this really big push around, you know, ESG and, you know, companies that need to really look at social considerations for investment and impact on the environment. It's interesting because we've always thought that, and it just became sort of ingrained. So I love the question around different ways of thinking, different sort of cultural contexts. These three shareholders, you rightly stated, are from three different regions. They have not done business together before, but they all have had a relationship with Scotiabank. And that's how, when we pitched this idea to them, that's how they came on board. They all have their own way of doing business. And I think what we're going to do as a differentiator for Cedarleaf is to be able to bring some of that thinking, some of that vision, and I believe some of those new types of investors as well to capital markets.
Tell us about the name. What is the significance of Cedarleaf as a name?
Cedarleaf is a very powerful plant. That's the cedar, the tree itself. It's a very powerful image for many, predominantly First Nation communities across Canada. It's a medicine. It's a tree that exists in all three regions where our shareholders are actually from. It's something which, it demonstrates strength, it demonstrates continuity, it demonstrates the leaves itself have medicinal purposes. And so with that, the discussion was around ensuring that when we created this investment dealer, that we were looking many generations ahead. And so it had that longevity and strong roots to the country. Mm.
You've got a pretty impressive track record. I looked at your LinkedIn profile, law degree, master's in public administration from Harvard, and you spent 20 years working in Indigenous banking with, you know, some big firms. As you reflect on that time, what would you say has changed and what hasn't changed when it comes to including Indigenous communities in the sort of financial ecosystem?
So, great question. I think what's changed is this natural progression towards, particularly, I mean, we're a natural resource-based country, right? So that natural progression towards engaging, involving, including Indigenous communities that could be perceived as being impacted on whatever development that would be. The fascinating thing about this, Bruce, is that, you know, we've seen this happen with renewable energy, we've seen it happen in the mining sector, and now it's expanding to include almost all facets or many facets of infrastructure across Canada. So that has been absolutely exciting. The challenge now is getting that access to equity so that communities actually have a source of capital to participate as equity owners into those projects where it actually makes sense. What hasn't changed? So there's a couple of areas. We're starting to see some change around Indigenous leadership at large corporations. public traded corporations, we're seeing some Indigenous leadership on boards. There should be more. The representation we have as Indigenous people, there has to be greater diversity on corporate boards anyway across Canada. It's something where I think the country is lagging, and you're seeing some strong leadership happening across the board with some companies, but I think we need to do more. The other area is in the area of investment management and finance, where some communities, or collectively communities, have probably in excess of about $15 billion. And these are, they're managed by, as you can imagine, investment managers. And there is just a handful of individuals who are Indigenous who are out there managing all of this capital. And as you can imagine, and I've heard it sort of anecdotally, where at times the investment policy, the investment manager, they're going down the road of investing in certain securities, which may not necessarily be aligned with the values of the community. And so I think there needs to be that push of greater inclusion of Indigenous people in that space as well.
Really interesting stuff. Well, best of luck as you move to the next chapter with Cedarleaf, and thanks for joining us today.
Nakumik, Bruce, always great to see you.
Clint Davis, CEO of Cedarleaf Capital, the first Indigenous-owned investment dealer in Canada.